Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Hi, hi, hi,
yeah, hey. Yeah. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Ooh, yeah.
Money draft. We don't record often enough for us to have a fucking procedure.
We have a body of work.
Money draft.
I could get more rage. I got my rage. Like, I was just, like, really angry before.
Money draft.
Friends, we're here again. Money Draft 68. As always, I'm JR, the Time Elemental. Here with me, my friend, Slick Jagger.
Hello, friends. How are you? It's good to be back. It's good to be talking to you guys. It's great.
It's been a while. And less of a while with my other friend here from Kalamazoo, Mr. Jason Ault. How are you, Jason?
Hey, friends. It's nice to be joined by our white listeners.
We're all nice here. Why would you say something like that?
Why would you fuck it all up?
That's exactly why you don't do the intros.
That's exactly why.
Usually it's dicks and pussies. Like nothing like of that nature, but this time we went there, so.
Hey, I thought that was nice. I thought that nobody's shouting out white people lately, and we deserve a break. It's about time somebody recognized our contributions.
You thought we created JR the Fart Man, just to parody old shitty radio DJs, but really it was just to get you to talk about farts and nothing more offensive than that.
Oh, I thought we were doing like an Alex Jones thing. Shit, I'm sorry. I thought we were doing a bit where I was gonna. Oh, is my face red? I'm so embarrassed. Sorry, everybody.
Take your shirt off.
They're kidnapping children and taking them to Martian colonies.
Oh boy. So
the alien pedophilia ring is coming down.
I mean, how long before aliens develop fetish? Because you think like the aliens see their first human, they're like, yeah, I want to have some bestiality with like some interspecies time with that. But do you think like how many humans would they need to see before they have alien pedophiles? Like, do you think it would be like the first time they saw a kid, they'd be like, that's extra good? Or do you think like it would take them a while? They'd have to get bored of just like banging some dude from the south that they abducted. Like, I'm sick of probing fucking dudes in overalls.
What if they're just some like weird species that like they like start big and then get smaller so they think the kids are the adults?
Oh shit.
It could be, you know, you never know, man. We could just call them pedophiles. They just think that they're fucking the mature ones. Who knows?
Oh my god!
It's outer space,
that's
dude.
So smart. They have no idea. They don't speak our language. How do they know they're fucking our kids? Oh, that's such a good point. And now, as a parent, I got more shit to be worried about. I got to worry about alien pedophiles now. Thanks.
There you go. See?
As if I didn't have enough to worry about.
It's like on Pornhub. You know those shrinking women orgasm videos? It's weird. It's just like a woman having a fake orgasm, but there's a special effect where she's either shrinking or growing. Like sixfold.
No, you know what I know what I've seen? I've seen this like with like these gigantic women and like tiny dudes, and they're like jamming the tiny dude in their vagina. It's either like a 50-foot woman or like a 2-inch dude. And I've seen these all over, and I tried to find an example, and I couldn't find it, so I guess all that disappeared for the internet, or I can't Google very well. But looking at Oketra's Last Mercy, it looks like she's jerking off a tiny dude. like holding him in one hand and jerking him off with the other hand. Am I the only one that thinks that when they see O'Ketra's Last Mercy? That's for sure. It looks like that gigantism porn to me. Or maybe I just want to see that, so I pretend I see that. Who knows, man? Who knows what's going on in the old dome? You know? It's who knows what I'm thinking about?
Do you like that card for EDH?
O'Ketra's Last Mercy?
Like, the rate is good, but what is it? Like, does it go in anything, really?
Nah, man. I mean, you can go up to 40, but, like, who gives a shit about that? Yeah. I actually don't like any of those cards.
Any of them? Even the blue one?
Why would you
gain gain control of everything? Enchantment land?
Control of a planeswalker? I don't know, man. But not having your lands on tap is super brutal.
Yeah, I mean, it's only 4. I don't know.
I mean, it's a little bit better. I would rather pay the 2 extra mana for Confiscate, personally. Like, an EDH, like, cost reduction with a drawback isn't that appealing. Personally. I don't find cost reduction with a drawback that appealing. You know? I don't like Nature's Claim when I can just play Naturalize. Some people, if you're like, oh, we gotta fucking get them on turn 2 before they go off, kind of EDH, but...
That's all I do, man. I just don't even want to think about any reaction. Just we played EDH, and Jason knows that. I just want to end the game.
I mean, we all just want to end the game, man. I play Insurrection, man. I clearly want games to end.
But I don't mind ending the game even if I come in second, as long as I just kill someone, and that's fine. That's where the politics come in.
I don't like playing with people like that, because people are like, if Jason loses, I get 5 points, and if I win, I get 3 points. So sometimes people just want to make me lose.
Yeah, but there is a thing where it's like, you go and you attack the weakling, and they're like, hey, you should attack the other guy, because they're going to win. And it's like, well, maybe. Maybe I'll just kill you, though.
Yeah, you're a fucking wild card. I wasn't prepared for that. He's like, this guy's winning. He's like, yeah, well, then he fucking wins. I'll attack a dude who missed a land drop. Everyone's like, damn, that's one way to play EDH. Shit. I'm not saying you're wrong. It was just like nobody was ready for it. That's that fucking JR rhetoric when it comes to, like, you're like, I'm playing a political game, but it's not the kind of fucking politics you'll be familiar with.
Yeah, I told Jason, whenever anyone starts complaining that I'm attacking them, I respond, because I had 2 experiences in Vegas where I was like, I sort of laid off on someone and then lost because of that. Whenever anyone just says anything political to me about not attacking them, my response is just shut the fuck up. I'm turning my guy sideways and coming in.
Yeah.
Even the...
guarantee JR will attack you by saying some shit like that.
Yeah. One thing I learned by playing Phil at the Command Zone party, Phil DeLuca, he was playing Tyranos and Kuros, or the group hub guys. You just want to kill the group hub guy, because and until you get to your critical, if you're waiting for something, if you're waiting to hit a land drop or something, it just doesn't make sense, because it's the same reason why you typically wouldn't play Howling Mine in a multiplayer game. It's just like the amount of advantage that's like going out over the whole table is, you know, the ratio is not favorable to you, the amount of cards that are accumulating and, you know, everyone else. But.
Yeah, that stuff is worse in EDH, because it's like you're drawing your opponent's 3 cards to your 1, or 4 cards to your 1.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's just like a complete scam, the whole group hub, at least that version of it. It's just trying to trick people, and it's like it's actually like kind of a bad deck. But I guess it's fun.
Nah, man, I've seen those decks straight shit on people when they get all their win conditions. Because they're like, what they're doing is they're drawing a bunch of extra cards so they get everything they need to go off. And they're like, oh, I'm just over here helping everybody. Hey, how about everybody gains 10 life? And everyone's like, oh, just gain 10 life. Cool, thanks. And you're like, oh, how about everybody draws a bunch of cards? You're like, gee, thanks. Thanks for drawing us all those cards. And then they just, like, shit directly in your torso. So you gotta be ready for that.
Yeah, I mean, I've never even seen some of the decks. Like, I've never even seen Zedru in action, so I don't know.
Zedru will just donate you a Transcendence, and then you'll straight lose instantly. So, I mean, those decks are nastier than you think. You're like, oh, the Zedru deck drew everybody some card. Oh, he gave me a Ghostly Prison. Thanks, Zedru. And then they give you a Illusions of Grandeur. That doesn't really kill people in EDH the way it used to.
Slick loves this shit.
Oh, yeah.
Just wants to hear the fucking EDH talk.
Yeah.
All fucking day.
Well, you turned into a fucking whore. It used to be 2v1 against all. Now, I'm not even fighting.
You know what? Because he saw how many prices EDH spikes.
Well, the deck building is really fun, and I enjoy how I enjoy the whole casual. I think I'm almost aggressively casual at this point in terms of I would like the game to grow, but to the extent possible, you know, not having to look at these Hall of Fame discussions once a year and play this whole status game that only 20 to 50,000 people on Earth really care about. I sort of like the direction that Josh and Jimmy are going in with more of a casual game. And I think that shows with Vegas. I mean, everyone's saying, oh, it felt more like a convention than a GP. And most of the people, I don't know about most of the people, but a lot of the people who went to the site didn't play in the main event. So,
yeah, I didn't fuck up and play any sanctioned shit.
But then again, I'm a shit player. I think I'm a good deck builder, but I'm a shitty player who will usually make a stupid error in the course of a match, and then walk away from the day just feeling like I wasted my time. So
we did not waste our time in Vegas. Well, I don't think I did. Jared might have a different opinion.
No, it was good for the most part.
Yeah, did you make any bad life decisions that you regretted later?
No, I don't know what you're referring to.
Did you make some questionable life choices?
Nope.
Did you ever say no more bad decisions for the rest of the trip? Did you say that at any point?
Definitely. It was very low key. Like, I think we barely like drank, or it was very low key. It was very mature.
It wasn't a salmon ball type Vegas.
No, it was a kind of hanging out at the site type Vegas, which is good. And I think so in terms of that, the house. So the big difference, I think, from past years, is that the taxi situation was much different. Lyft has really brought down sort of, prices of getting around, you know, with a car. So I feel like the whole house equation has changed a bit. I feel like, if you want to be on the strip, it's not quite as attractive as it was to me coming into this year. You know, like Vegas 1, we had Marcel and everyone, we had the house, and it was kind of a good serendipitous culmination of events. Vegas 2, we had the house, and that was great. But to the people who staying at the house, especially the people who were sort of had responsibility, they didn't really. It was hard to get out of the house, and they didn't really get to meet a lot of new people. So I think what it comes down to, you know, house versus hotel is that, you know, if you want to network, if you want to meet new people and go to the site every day, not to mention if you just like being on the strip and going out every night playing blackjack or whatever, hotel is probably for you. If you are less inclined to, you know, network and you're just content to sort of hang out with people you already know, and you don't have a big need to be on the strip, maybe a house is a bit better. So I think that's sort of my feeling walking away from Vegas to also, yeah, everyone say it would be a little better to have more planned events because, you know, it is actually hard to coordinate, and there's enough getting around is hard enough, you know, even with the taxi situation being a little bit better, that getting around is hard enough that it's hard to spontaneously just bring two or three crews together to a given restaurant on time, especially when there's no reservations or, you know, anything like that.
So. Yeah, that's how you end up going to the wrong fucking restaurant. That's how that happens.
I think I saw that on Twitter, and it made me really, really happy.
Marcel thought I was mad, but honestly, I was having the best time just tweeting. So what I'm referring to is I had been asleep for an hour and a half, and Marcel's like, do you want to go to Hash House? And I was like, how about fuck yeah? Because that's like the only thing that's going to get me out of bed at that point, is Hash House. So I was like, fuck it, let's go. And we went to Hash House, and nobody was there. We were supposed to meet, like, Maddie and, like, I think Frankie and Proxy Guy and just, like, a bunch of people. And, like, we text them, like, where are you at? We're at Hash House. And they're like, oh, we went to Guy Fieri's restaurant. And I was like, no. But the Audible was called, and so that was the place. So we went downstairs to Guy Fieri's restaurant. And I didn't eat anything. I didn't order anything. So everybody else ordered, and it was like $25 for a shitty cheeseburger. And I was like, you can suck my dick. So I just sat there tweeting about Flavortown facts, and I had a really good time just being the mayor of Flavortown.
Welcome to Flavortown.
Yeah, the thing about it...
You should have taken pictures of the menus, man.
I took pictures of the napkins, at least.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell how bad each dish is. So the thing is, it's not a simple case of, oh, this food is a 4 out of 10. It's more like...
This food is a 4 out of 10, but it's dressed like Kid Rock dresses himself.
Yeah, it's like each dish had a catastrophic failure that was just unnecessary. And it's like, why would you do that? Like, why would you make the buffalo wings taste like cinnamon? Like, you can do that, but... Like,
it's Flavortown!
He added Fireball whiskey to make them hotter. What's hotter than a Fireball? Wow!
Marcel just sent them back immediately. Like, just it's not that they were undercooked or anything. It's just like, yeah, this flavor is unacceptable. It's just you can't do this to me. I demand my money back. So Flavortown, that was a thing. Oh, man. I guess the Bloody Mary was okay. How hard is it to fuck up a Bloody Mary? And honestly, I'm not even a big fan of Hash House either. I mean, their food is definitely big.
That's big what I food. Wanted. I wanted a big food Vegas experience.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. What did you even eat that day?
Me?
Yeah.
Shit, probably nothing. I don't remember. I probably got like... I ate much later in the day. I just didn't eat. I drank all day. That's what I did.
Bullshit. No one did that.
Yeah, it's true. I think all. I had an edible and I just forgot to eat. So I had like a bite of a Rice Krispie treat. That's all I ate that day.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It was a good time.
So yeah, we hit up tacos and beer a few times. First time with Ken Loader and Joe Burnham Turnham. Second time after DJ's wedding, just sweet.
Well, we got dropped off. Yeah, well, like it's near the convention center. It's like a couple blocks away, and we kind of went there on accident 2 years ago. There was just like a bunch of us just walking. We just like walked away from the convention center in a straight line. And we found this place called Beer and Tacos, and they actually had a really good beer selection. Like a really, really good beer selection. Like, they had a beer cooler with, like, really rare shit. Some of the stuff that's hard to get in the Western United States. It was a little pricey for some of that stuff, but the tacos were super reasonable. So, like, if you wanted tacos in a Miller Lite, you could get that. But if you wanted, like, really expensive beer, like, Travis Allen and I split a really dark stout called The Abyss. Which was fantastic. I forget who makes that. I'll look that up. Because I would recommend that. I mean, like all my beer snob friends were like super impressed with that place. So you could go there for cheap, but you didn't have to. It's a Deschutes Brewery makes The Abyss. It's a bourbon barrel aged. It's about 11%. Real molassesy character to it. Like it's real viscous. Very enjoyable. They had a lot of other good stuff in their freezer too, or their cooler too. So whatever, we found a decent enough place that was within walking distance of the Westgate, or like a $2 cab ride, and we kept running it back because it's like, do we really want to take a chance on something random? So maybe that's not the way to do it. Maybe that's what the people who eat at Domino's Pizza all the time say. But
why roll the dice, man?
But hey, it was convenient enough that like if we didn't want to go out somewhere crazy, it was close enough. But I only ate there twice. We went a lot of other good places too. So I feel like every time I go to Vegas, like I'm just building my mental Rolodex of good places to eat, and then I'll just eat at one of them repeatedly.
Are you going back ever?
I mean, if there's a GP Vegas 2017, I'll take my 35-year-old ass out there, sure.
Yeah, as much as I'm like, oh, I can't do this again, I probably would.
It's a week.
Yeah.
Just a week.
Speaking of beer snobbery, you know, sometimes when it's 115 degrees and you want like a good session beer, like sometimes you might buy Heineken. This was a matter of controversy at the house that sort of trickled back to me through three different channels. we went on a late night beer run, and JR just picked up 12 Heineken just because, hey man, it's like a good summer drinking beer. It's like the kind of beer you want to like drink after mowing the lawn.
I would drink Miller Chill before I drank Heineken. I will now make a comical list of beers that I would drink before I drink Heineken. Like, Heineken's not even a good shitty beer, though. I would drink PBR before I drink Heineken. I don't know why you got Heineken.
I like the green glass, I think, ultimately, is like psychologically why.
Oh, shit, that's such a legit reason.
I wanted to picture myself sitting in the sun, staring at a palm tree, then looking at the blue water of the pool, then my green glass, and just like doing that, you know, over and over.
And then the palm tree dies.
Really not that palm tree, but yeah.
A different palm tree that's still alive.
Somehow my palm tree dies because it's like 70 degrees in here. I just don't understand.
You fed it Heineken.
Yeah, you shouldn't have fed it Heineken, man.
It watched you drink a Heineken and is like, oh shit, I'm in a poor person's house, and it committed suicide.
So, you know, sometimes it's not that people are ignorant, they just want something. So shout out to everyone in the SVU house. Like, that was a great house. In some ways, it was the nicest house of the three that we've had. A little smaller, which I think also was part of my mindset change on having a house. I think it's a lot different when you have six or eight people and everyone can ship out in two cars. Than having 18 to 21 people. It's a lot different. Also, the fact that there were parties at the house, but there wasn't just like, hey, this is the party night and, you know, 50 people show up. That also sort of brought down the whole stress level, I think, of keeping a house.
Yeah, all in all, I think that was a good house situation. I'm glad I didn't stay in the house, but I wouldn't have minded as much if that had been the house situation versus 2 years ago. 4 years ago, I don't know, that wasn't too chaotic 4 years ago, but 2 years ago was definitely like, oh, fuck, we have taken this concept way past the acceptable place, and now it's a liability for everybody.
Yeah, that was it was fun, but it was definitely a bit unnerving.
Yeah, but eight people, I think they had eight, Ian, Jack, Brett, Justin, Joe, Bruce, Ken, and Anthony, who's, I don't think he's even on Twitter, or I don't know if he is, like, so I think they had like eight, well, and I crashed there one night, so they had nine plus, but, yeah, I think they figured out a better way to do it. So I think that would be sort of the model, I think, for next time. And then so the first night we went over there, Proxy guy came over with his cube. That was the first time we cubed with Proxy. As always, just stunning experience, aside from some of TSG's mid-range choices, but which just kidding.
I was five and one in matches. In that cube, like, for whatever reason, like, I just, good stuff happened to me. I ended up mono green when I ultimately won, which I didn't expect to be good, but really got there.
Yeah,
and then I had this really good Monastery Mentor deck that I got my mana base shit on me in the finals because it was Jeskai colored. But yeah, I had a really good time with that cube.
Yeah, the deck you 3-0'd with, that was, it was kind of like a green EDH deck, only it had Raphelos. Like, just a lot of ramp.
Yeah, it was like EDH, but better.
A lot of putting lands into play. Yeah, that was the one I was salty when you, like, again, I made an error. I had a token, and I was using a die to represent it, and I forgot about it, and I literally could have, like, killed you and won that match. Oh, no, that was game two. Actually, my real mistake was not mulliganing the next game, so... Because I was so tilted from not attacking you with the die.
Would you have won?
I think I would have... I mean, I don't know, but I think I would have won... Yeah, I think you were at two life when you started your turn, and I would have hit you for two. So that game, I don't know about the match. Actually, no, I'm sorry. I would have won the match, because that would have been my second game, and then I just tilted and didn't mulligan in the third. But... So
it's quality content.
You know, even in the now the point is like even in the most casual of contexts, JR finds a way to get pissed off about Magic.
That deck I was turn four natural ordering for Craterhoof and winning though. Like that deck was absurd.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do with my EDH Kamal Fistic Frozen deck. It's pretty good. It's fragile, but. Pretty good and consistent. The other one I had was Xenagos, which is sort of a slightly slower, I guess, but more resilient version where you're just trying to kill people and end the game. You don't really have too many control elements. But
you don't have access to that many control elements in green red.
I mean, you got Decimate. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you got a new sweeper today, right? You got that.
Oh, yeah. Devastation. Hour of Devastation.
So I guess, yeah, there were a bunch of cards spoiled.
I like Hour of Glory because it looks like Ronus is about to take a scorpion cock. He's being grabbed very roughly from behind.
Right. It's like the George Bush. It's like the George Bush Angela Merkel thing.
Right? Angela Merkel thing. Yeah, yeah. How about a little shoulder rub?
Yeah, and he's like, oh, what's going on? Yeah,
like, I don't know why I imagine that's how the scorpion god talks, because he's gigantic, right? He makes Ronus, he's a full head taller than Ronus, and I'm still like, ah, this is my voice. I don't know why. It's because he's a fucking scorpion, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I went to this bar with Tim and DeForest, who is Marcel's friend, cool guy, who also stayed with us.
Did I meet that? I don't think I met him. Oh, I met him, like, in a hallway briefly. Like, yeah. We were in the same suite, and I talked to him one time. That's how crazy it was, man. We were never there.
And then Tim Appenkar, who's on the Legacy Premier League. But we went to this restaurant where they had these scorpion shots. You're supposed to, like, take a shot with a live scorpion. We didn't see this, but we did see the tank with scorpions when we walked in. And the funny thing was, like, there were a bunch of crickets in there also. So we walked in, it's like, oh, the old insect and roach, you know, aquarium when you walk into the restaurant. Like, so there's a giant aquarium in the restaurant with insects crawling around. Is it like the vibe? It's pretty Vegas.
That's a cool vibe, man.
I guess. In terms of new cards, a bunch were spoiled. I did glance at the Ixalan ones, but... we don't need to talk about those.
I haven't really looked at those enough.
Honestly, I didn't. I looked at them quickly. Nothing jumped out that was like, oh, it's just sort of like, ah, that's interesting. It's interesting. Oketra's Last Mercy. Again, the rate in NEDH is kind of interesting, but what is that going to do?
I like how dirty the art is. There's some dirty art, man. Hour of Devastation looks like a dude opening up a trench coat to flash everybody.
I haven't really looked at the art in sort of a sexual way yet.
What the fuck is defeat. Are you talking about, Jason?
This is defeat. Looks all fucking. I've seen enough hentai to know where that card's going. You don't think these cards are all dirty, dude? They got some big dick horses. How is a horse 5/5? You're telling me that a knight on horseback is a 2/2, but just a fucking horse is 5/5. Let's think of the number of 5/5 horses we've had over the years. We've had Thundermare, and then the other one, the color shifted one. There was Lava Mare or whatever.
What was the
green one? Anyway, there was.
Isn't there a Trojan horse with a Trojan horse? No, that was just a
frozen horse. Yeah, there's the 5/5 horse token you make from that black red hybrid card. I forget what that was. And now there's this Crested Sunmare that makes 5/5 horse tokens. I'm like, why are there... There's like 2/1/1 horses in Magic. And then there's like a bunch of 5/5 horses. Why are there so many 5/5 horses? a horse big enough to crush five men at once.
It's fucking magic.
Yeah,
it's a magical horse.
Do you see it fucking leaping like that?
I get it, it's crested, but like, how big is this horse, man?
The crest is magic. It's not like a normal crest.
I get that there's magic involved. Thank you. I'm just saying.
I don't know if you do.
So you're telling me this horse went up against Telem Tor, who's a 3-3 legendary general on horseback, that the horse could beat the guy plus the horse easily?
I think so.
Okay.
Okay.
I want to make sure that's okay with you, because that's not okay with me. There are too many fucking 5-5 horses in Magic.
I mean, we've had gods, like, riding unicycles, so, you know.
Yeah, dude. That horse is big enough to beat a car in combat. How are you going to beat a fucking car when you're a fucking horse? You ever see a horse get hit by a car? Car gets pretty fucked up, but the horse is dog meat. So, I don't know, man. I don't know if I agree with...
Do you have a new pocket of YouTube videos that you're referencing? So, yeah, horses getting hit by cars compilation.
I'm sorry, JR. I figured if there was anybody on the fucking planet who had seen a whole YouTube video of horses getting hit by cars, it would be you. And now you're making fun of me for having seen that? Really? You?
Yeah,
you who took me through the Bally's Hotel and was like, that's where the fire started. You? You're going to get me?
Yeah, we went through there especially so that we could see where the when it was the MGM fire in 81, where that started over at the deli. It was haunted. It felt like really weird, and we had to break our way out of there. Again, the thing about Vegas.
You knew too much about. Here's the problem. JR's knowledge is a liability. If we had gone toward where the fire started and just walked through the front of the casino, we would have ended up at the train station within 2 minutes. But he's like, nah, it's this way. He'd seen a map of the hotel and studied it to see where the fire spread. So we followed the path of the fire, and we ended up going down a hallway and seeing a convention where all these fucking people who just body piercers. That was their convention. So there were body piercers, EDC people, and magic nerds all in fucking Vegas at the same time. So we were walking, and we had to go through one of the rooms that the body piercing thing was in, and then we went into this big empty room that was locked, and we tried every single door and finally got out a huge loading dock door, walked down a loading ramp, and then we ended up in a parking lot, and we had to like double back through Bally's just to get... We had to go through their tennis area just to get to the
monorail. Yeah, the point is, like, we knew that the monorail station was right basically 100 feet from where we were standing, but, like, Vegas...
We did, like, a spiral. We, like, walked the perimeter of the whole building and spiraled in a little bit. It was fucking terrible.
That's Vegas.
If we had just followed a sign that said monorail, we would have been there in 30 seconds, but it turned into a 20-minute fucking death march with me with my heavy-ass backpack.
But it felt like really depressing and haunted in there. It was a good...
Yeah, I mean, no, the ambiance was on point, man. I was like, yeah, people fucking died here for sure.
Unlike Circus, which was the casino in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and from the outside looked just like a complete dump, 1975 era. But inside, I mean, it was also a dump, but not in an interesting way. So I went there with Ken and Marcel, and it was not anything to do again. I pictured 70s carpets. For some reason, I just pictured more decrepit decor, but I was disappointed.
I'm sorry, man. Sorry you didn't get your way.
The haunted elevator in Proxy's Hotel, the Westgate.
Yeah, it wasn't just haunted. It was just like trash. It was just, they had trash elevators. Like, shit, we have fucking 10,000 people stay in our hotel every fucking weekend. Maybe we should have a bank of 5 elevators and have only one of them work well. Like, that's their fucking plan. It's not a good plan. I don't know why that's their plan.
Saving that money, rubbing those hands together.
Scrooge McDuck even would be like, yeah, let's take some coins out of my fucking swimming pool and fix the fucking elevator. Because we're in the customer service industry. And maybe we should fucking be able to serve our customers. So there was like, Luckily, everything was connected on the upper floors, so you could take any elevator and then just, like, walk. But, like, you had to walk, like, a half mile and then double back to get to the elevator versus just using the elevator that takes you right to your room. But, hey, whatever. I didn't stay at the Westgate, luckily. I'm really glad we didn't. So, whatever.
Matt,
why would it be for me to tell a fucking successful Vegas hotel how to run their fucking elevator system?
Matt, you kind of warned everyone. But again, if your main goal is to be at the site, I think, or maybe the Renaissance, which is where Frankie stayed, maybe that's a little nicer, even though it's just a small, regular Marriott without any real pretense of, you know, being a Vegas casino. But that home to the largest sign in the world, which was relevant because we had like two or three just weird lifts, which I guess, you know, is part of the deal. You know, a couple of times Marcel, he was in the front seat and just had to the person was just doing the wrong thing constantly. And just like, no, you know, just turn off your shit. I'm just going to tell you what to do. But this one guy was just crazy. It was just like a joke. He was trolling us. It was just every half block. He was like, turn here. No, his GPS was working. It was crazy. It got to the point where Jason was like, he's like, are you fucking kidding me? It's like, I mean, he was laughing as he said it, but he's like literally like told the cab, are you fucking kidding me?
That is true. I did that. It turns out, no, he wasn't fucking kidding me.
And then when we finally like get to the West Gate, right by the biggest sign on earth, and we start to go into the big cul-de-sac, he starts to take a fucking left on the cul-de-sac. So good. Taking less than the cul-de-sac like a crazy man.
He's new to the country.
I think he was new to driving, dude. He's like, sorry, my last car was a rickshaw.
Oh, jeez. See, now we have to... I'm going to have to bury this episode.
What, man? I didn't say that because he was Chinese. I said that because he used to be a rickshaw driver. He doesn't know how to drive a car. Fuck, dude. Why do you gotta pretend everything I say is racial? Like, that says a lot more about you as a person than what I actually said.
Oh, God. Just
throw that shit out there.
Because bringing up a rickshaw is very normal.
Yeah, now, dude.
That's my Corbin style answer.
I've been in a rickshaw one time in my life, right? And a white guy was doing it. So, you know what? Maybe you're the racist.
I don't know, man. We checked out some craps with Tim and Jess and Marcel. And Tim was getting, like, for the most part, people weren't getting fucked up. But Tim was getting a little bit fucked up at that point. And the pit boss had to come over and, like, kind of yell at him because he, like, two or three times he just, like, a die went flying off the table. And then he was sort of... He was sort of like languidly, kind of like, you know, with his drink and like waving the dice around. They were like, hey, you need to like keep the dice in sight at all time. Like he was basically like, they thought he was acting like a clown. So they're like, hey, this guy's like clowning around too much and he's up a little bit. Like, what's going on here?
And they thought he was like David Copperfield. Like, oh, are these your dice? Oh, they went up my sleeve. Now I'm using loaded dice. I don't know, man. They don't like you to rub your dice in between two hands, even. They're like, no, one hand. That's crazy. They're crazy about their dice.
But, yeah, I didn't really get sloppy at all until the very last day with Ken Loader, where in the morning everyone at the SVU house went to Mr. Mama's for a last breakfast and then kind of broke up. But Ken and me were going to be in town for a while.
Monday?
Yeah, it's Monday. So we decided to just kind of hit the strip and kind of like bar crawl and, you know. So we got in an accident actually in the cab, extremely similar to the accident I was in with KYT and Frankie, where someone just rear-ended us. It felt exactly the same. It was just like, brum. And then but we were sort of in the best mood possible. We were like, hey, we got nothing to do today. So we can kind of like sit here for 10 minutes and just chill. And then we got our bags out without it. It may have been sealed, the trunk. We just got them out of the back seat. And we got sloppy that day. And I ended up just sort of waking up at some point and going to the airport. So what else happened in terms of, I guess you would say networking? We had an interesting serendipitous brunch where Aaron Forsythe basically walked in and probably would have just not looked at us, but Josh Lee Kwai was there. So he was like, hey. So.
Well, I didn't think he knew who I was.
Yeah,
and then I introduced myself. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, you're EDH Ryan Seacrest. And I was like, God damn it.
Oh, did he say that? I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, well, he'd followed me on Twitter for a while, but I didn't think he would, like, know who I was. But, yeah, that was pretty funny.
But the editor, the Command Zone editor, I think his name is Terry, spilled a carafe of coffee on Aaron. It's kind of...
That's good.
Kind of.
Oh, no. When he was, like... getting all shitty about all the like changes coming to Moto, and Aaron was sort of like, I just wanted to have fucking brunch, dude. Like Marcel he sent a text to Josh Lee Kwai. He's like, or to me, he's like, tell Josh to tell his boy to fucking reel it in.
Yeah,
his fucking rhetoric was real strong, and Aaron Forsythe was like, what the fuck, I didn't come to brunch to be accosted.
Yeah, I don't think he maybe quite knew who Aaron was, so he was like, what the fuck, you know. So that was cool. DJ's Wedding, which we sort of alluded to earlier, good experience.
Oh, dude, I was at peak wedding enjoyment at that part of my day. Like, we couldn't have picked a better hour out of the day for me to enjoy it as much as possible. Like, it was... everything lined up for me to just get the most possible out of that wedding. It was perfect.
Yeah, I was a little bit nervous going over there. We were on the bus. It was supposed to be a half-hour bus ride. It was like a half hour, then 40 minutes and 50 minutes. And then I was thinking to myself, wait, there's going to when we get there, there's going to be a building, right, with drinks and, you know. And I got really afraid that it was...
I can see this all happening in my head so clearly.
There was not a building.
It was 7 o'clock. You know, we left at maybe 7 o'clock on Friday night in Vegas. And it was approaching 8:30. So I was thinking to myself, wait a minute. Are 3 hours going to go by and we're not going to have any drinks or anything? But that was not the case. It was actually very nice.
They had real champagne.
Yeah.
There you go.
For what they paid for the wedding, I think real champagne was a nice surprise. Because they probably didn't pay a ton for the ceremony, because it was just out in a dry lake bed. And like there was just like a Jeep and this little tiny pull behind trailer. And it had neon lights and it said "Sure." And I thought for some reason that was going to be part of the ceremony. It was like, do you take this for your bride? Sure. Because you don't say I do in fucking Vegas. You're like, meh. We could probably annul this. So I thought maybe they were going to say sure or something. But no, that's not the case.
Sure. Fine.
Sure.
Yeah, that was good, though.
Good. Yes.
Good. No, seriously, there's nothing I would rather be doing. Even though at the time going out, it was like, oh, what's going on here?
Well, no one likes the bus ride. So, like, no one's shitting on you for not enjoying the bus ride. Nobody enjoyed. So, like, yeah, it was really funny to all be miserable on the bus. And then when we were at, like, peak anger, he's like, you know, there's a cooler of cold water at the front of this bus, right? And everyone was like, oh, shit, game changer. And then everyone got real excited because everyone had cold water, and then the bus pulled off the road, and I was like, well, we're either going to get raped and murdered, or we're going to witness a wedding. And I'm here to tell you that it was just the latter. So everything went about as well as it could have. Plus, the chick performing the ceremony, the wind caught her every word she said, and I couldn't hear anything she was saying, which just made the whole thing really fucking hilarious to me.
Yeah,
I still don't know what she said to them.
I was also really nervous about having to go to the bathroom because there's no bathroom out there. And we start drinking champagne. And then I'm like, wait, are we going to have to go back at a 90-minute ride? But fortunately, we hit a rest stop. But people were trying to convince me to just leave the group and go behind the bus to go. And I thought that would be very obvious. Like, if you like... the bus is pretty far away. You'll see me like going behind the bus and then coming back. So too worried to do that, but Overall, very good.
Solid.
Yeah, it was solid. It was a good time.
The other day we had Bhushan with Bruce Lee and Alec Gibot and Adrian and Ken and Marcel. And I ordered none of the entrees jumped out at me. So I went with something that I knew was not the most elegant choice, but it was a croque madame. And this thing comes out and it's the most basic fucking shit you've ever seen. Everyone else's entree, even though they just sounded normal. They didn't sound incredible on paper. You could tell there was some craft there and some choices. Mine was just like...
So they just made you a regular croque madame?
It was so basic. It was not... It was beyond minimalist. Like, I could see... Like, I understand. Like, sometimes you just go minimalist. But this was just like a bunch of fries. Like, it's like crappy fries where I had better fries in a bar 2 days later. A mass of fries. You know, just regular McDonald's gauge fries. And the croque was just two toasted pieces of white bread with an egg on top and ham, just like crap ham. So first of all, I decided, like, you know what? I'm just never going to order ham again at why did I do that? But the thing is, I've had good creative croque madames in the past, like a pastis, and like there are ways to do it where it's not just like this basic fucking thing. So I just felt betrayed by the menu. I was like,
"It sounds like you ordered that. That's like what they would bring you if you ordered it off the menu." It's like, "Can I order something you don't have on your menu? How about a croque madame?" And they're like, "Yeah, of course I know how to make that. I went to culinary school. Fine, here, fuckface. Here's your croque madame." But like, they hate fucked you with a dish that like they put on their menu. It's like they tricked you into ordering it, and then it's like, "Oh, some asshole wants a croque madame. Fine, here you go, Wonder Bread and ham."
That's exactly what it was like. It's like just an insult. It's just like, man, you made me feel like I ordered from the kids' menu. So, but otherwise, it was okay. I don't know. The thing is, in the future, I won't get as uptight about eating at restaurants in Vegas because I feel like if that's my first experience with a nicer restaurant in Vegas, then I don't know. I'm sure it varies, but. Yeah, I live in New York. People live in big cities. You know, it is nice to go out and spend, especially if you're spending, you know, above whatever $30 a plate on something, to not be, you know, just buying something basic. But
you know, we try to do that no matter where we go. We try to have it's like an unspoken rule that we try to have one meal that's going to cost about $100 a person every time we go somewhere, and I like that tradition.
Sure. No, I like it, but I'm just saying, like, you shouldn't if something happens and it falls through, like in the future, I'm not going to get as like uptight about that. Like it, you know, and unless there's a very special place like Noma or something, you know, obviously that you really plan for, but you know, lessons learned. So I think we've probably bored people enough with Vegas recap.
That was an hour of it. Yeah, it's an hour of it.
That's JR's Slick touch. That's JR's definition of touch and go, boys.
Slick wasn't even there, so you're just shitting right in his mouth.
Hey,
it's
man.
All good, dude. I wanted to hear it.
Confirmed. Yeah, no scandalous stories that you missed or anything.
That's solid.
So we'll do it in 2 years.
Yeah. I don't know, man. What if I got two kids in 2 years? There's no way I can foist two kids on my wife. I got away with it this time.
Yeah. Everything just collapses with stunning rapidity.
Can we just go to like Florida or something? Just like hang out in the house.
That is this 115 shit. Just what the fuck?
Let's just go to Key West and abandon the pretense of a Magic tournament.
That's what I'm saying. So let's just go on a friend's vacation once a year. You know,
sounds good.
Friends vacation.
I was constantly on the knife edge between fighting off dehydration and having to go to the bathroom. every half hour, I would, because I was just drinking water, but I wasn't absorbing it, and I had to go to the bathroom every half hour. So just very uncomfortable the whole time in Vegas. Which again, I think if at a house, I think it's a little better. So that's an old man consideration.
Boom.
Ugh. Yeah, getting older.
It sounds like it was a blast, man. Very solid.
Very solid.
Did anything happen in Magic recently? I mean, there's been, like, spoilers we kind of touched on. There's that, the whole another round of Hall of Fame bullshit. Just, there's that.
Why isn't... I'm sick of hearing people who play in an era where there's a Grand Prix every weekend acting like fucking Pakula's record when there was, like, 5 Grand Prix a year isn't good enough. Man, I think Mike Long should be in the Hall of Fame. And everyone acts like Morrow's a retard for saying that same thing. Like, who's more famous than Mike Long in Magic? He's Magic's most famous heel. The guy, his fucking shenanigans are legendary. Sitting up on sitting on the back part of the chair, because he's like, oh, my back hurts, I can't sit in a chair normal. So he puts his feet up on the butt part of the chair, and he puts his butt up on the back part. And he was, like, looking at people's hands.
That's good.
Like, the guy was... Like, even the shit he did that wasn't illegal. Like, when he pitched his one dark ritual, or his one drain life to get his combo going. And he's like, alright, I got a bunch of black mana. Do you really want me to go through the motions of the combo? And the guy's like, nah, you're fine. Let's go to game 2. Like, he didn't even have a win condition. But, like, there's people that he's, like, straight cheated. Like Darwin Castle, still furious that he got away with basically marking his, that one wolf that searches for the other copies of it. He basically, like, weaved them throughout his deck so he wouldn't draw a second one. And, like, Darwin caught him, but, like, nothing came of it, and he's still pissed about that. So, yeah, I mean, the guy's fucking infamous. Maybe it's just because I've been playing Magic forever and I used to read Duelist and hear all about this shit, but, man, you can't not put Mike Long in the fucking Hall of Fame just because he's a piece of shit. That's not enough of a reason. Right?
The Pro Tour Hall of Fame, and he's basically stealing money from people.
Yeah, that's hilarious, though.
Yeah, it does point to the whole tension between, like, all of Morrow's comments were that this, in terms of marketing, this was great. In terms of marketing, again, there are 20 to 50,000 people who care about super, super tight play, probably. And they don't really seem to drive numbers. You know, you look at the Pantheon stream, and I understand, like, they all have jobs, and it's not a priority for the people on there, you know. But you compare their numbers to something even like the Legacy Premier League, and the numbers are pretty comparable. So I don't know if these personalities, these, you know, Peach Garden Oath types that we have, again, sure, there are thousands of people who look up to these people, but in terms of driving numbers, like, what is WotC paying them for? What does Hasbro get out of this, really?
I think they're making the case that they're, like, bringing intangibles to the table, and that's how they're getting paid, because I haven't really seen any data to suggest that they're doing anything for Wizards at all. I think having a Hall of Fame,
Fame. They get people to play in tournaments because they have some aspiration to do that as well, and tournaments are money, and, I mean, I don't know how much it is, and I totally agree that, like, there's definitely a lot of revenue from, like, newer players that just want to play the game, but, like, I don't know. I think I think they do something. I wouldn't.
You said doo-doo.
Yeah, maybe.
they definitely do, but I think it's for a relatively small amount of people. And again, actually going back to whatever players I talked to at Vegas, all the competitive players are just talking about the structure, and it's like, oh, I knew some person who came in 9th and got shit, or they came in 33rd and got shit, and it's just like the whole game is definitely moving away from the competitive GP model. Also evidenced by this happened a while ago, but Helen Bergeau leaving, you know, it's all part of the same picture.
Yeah, she got,
I don't know what happened. Did she get fucking shit canned or did she leave? I don't know what happened.
I don't know.
I felt like she didn't say that she left of her own accord, so, you know. But I think I don't think it reflects on her at all. Of all the people who work at WotC, from my limited perspective, I don't get the feeling that if she did like get let go, it doesn't reflect on her at all. It reflects on their priorities and maybe also her salary, as reflected in her director title. But I think, you know, I think it does feed into the big picture of, you know what, maybe this whole, you know, GP, PTQ, competitive magic angle is not what's making Hasbro the most money. Maybe Commander is making them more money.
Well, there's no question Commander's making them more money.
And even on the competitive or quote-unquote competitive side, you know, like, again, you get these people like Saffron Olive, Gabby Sparse, their viewers, they get like 10x viewers of Pantheon. You know, you have like Finkel and, you know, some like super, like if you get like Finger Boudet and Nassif like drafting together, and, you know, 5,000 people maybe will watch that. But these other, like, you get Saffron Olive and then you get 10,000, right? I mean, it's not clear how much, you know, pro magic players should be paid. And people who say like, oh, you know, in 2000, the payout hasn't changed since 2000, which is true. It seems ridiculous in terms of everything else is sort of gone up in terms of inflation. But why should you get that money? And it goes back to Morrow's, like, that's part of the same picture where Morrow's just like, well, you know, I don't really give a shit about the sanctity of the game. This guy's pulling numbers.
Oh, when they add just like fucking complete randos
with Mike Long, I mean.
Oh, oh. The whole. Yeah, yeah. No, I get that. Like, it's a Hall of fucking Fame, not a Hall. Ah, man, I don't know. As much as he's an asshole, like, he's a heel, and I don't see that as a reason not to let him be in the Hall of Fame.
As long as it's a Pro Tour Hall of Fame, he doesn't belong in it. If they ever switch it to just being a general Magic the Gathering Hall of Fame, he belongs in it. But a guy that's just a savage cheater, as long as it's about the Pro Tour and the best people, like, he just doesn't belong in there. But
well, does Dave Williams belong in the Hall of Fame?
No.
Just because he's a cheater?
I don't necessarily think that if somebody's a cheater, they should be in the Hall of Fame. If it's the Pro Tour Hall of Fame. If it's just the Magic Hall of Fame, of course, Mike Long and Dave Williams belong in there, for sure.
And honestly, I don't assign poker players much status either. Like, I think it's sort of, like, yeah, it's, yeah, if you've made $1 million plus playing poker, it's a skill, but... Ooh. The whole scene is a little, like, Vegas itself is a little small time, wannabe big time, loserish kind of scene.
Shots fired.
But I definitely respect, like, because it's very clear, people understand, like, if you win a Pro Tour, the level of skill that's involved in terms of the status. If you tell someone you're a hedge fund manager, they're sort of like, man, whatever, like, I don't know what that means. There are a lot of bullshit, you know, people in finance and whatever. Maybe your dad. But if like someone won a Pro Tour, it's like, well, that is pretty impressive.
Quite the analogy there, JR.
Hey, man. This is...
JR's got the best analogies. Everybody knows that.
This is the real money draft content.
Boom, boom, baby.
Do we have more spoilers? I think we do have a lot of more spoilers.
What do you mean more? We've never talked about our Devastation spoilers. Unless you're talking about the one card we talked about earlier in this cast.
We talked about, like, two or three or four.
I talked about art that looked like fucking rapes happening. That's about it.
I was counting that. I was counting the three of those. The first one that – this is an old card, too, the Ramana Excavation. So now,
yeah. The Ramana Excavator?
Yeah, Excavator. So now green just has a bunch of crucibles. Cool. And on top of everything else they have, that's why I bought a Sylvan Tutor at Vegas. So we can have like a little MTG finance thing too.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, the,
The first day, this week about all the cards I think that Ramunap Excavator could make go up. Just correlating with what is green and already played with Crucible. So I think the Gitrog Monster deck has the most to gain because it was already a Crucible deck. And it was already green. And I think, what's the other one?
I don't know. But yeah, obviously the Gitrog, which it's not even really moving yet. It's kind of interesting. Right?
Well, Gitrog Monster took months to move stuff last time. Everyone's like, oh, we do want Dakmor Salvage. I'm like, yeah, dude, I fucking told you that a month ago. But people waited till like the set came out and they had the physical copy of the card in their hand to start building the deck. That's what EDH players always do.
Yeah. The Sylvan Tutor, though. So, yeah, on site. So the first day there with Jason, after we checked out the Bally's sort of accident site, fiasco site, that was our just kind of mellow on-site time where we went around and I bought some cards. And I was picking up Mana Crypt specifically around $100. MDG Deals had the lowest one in the room at $95. How Are You? They had one at $105. And those are the two lowest ones I saw all weekend. Basically, I bought like every Mana Crypt under $100. You know, Masterpiece Mana Crypt under $100 I'd find. I think that seems good. It seems good, especially I'm getting into EDH and Soul Ring is going crazy. The other one we sort of debated a little bit. It was the German Soul Ring for 20-25.
Yeah, I should have bought it.
But no, you shouldn't, because you know what? You go on the ABU and I think they have like 15 played German Soul Rings for $20. So you were exactly right. 25 was too high. 20 was the right price.
I don't want played.
Yeah,
you're right. I could probably do better. Just that was the only one in the room, and I was like, I forgot that German did that crazy Renaissance set.
Yeah. So I mean, think about like German black bordered Soul Ring. Everyone, like, if you don't know what the card does by the old art, I mean, you've got probably issues in terms of, you know, playing in general. Nothing wrong with that, but I'm just saying, like, if you're not
a baddie, you're just new, and new's fine.
Yeah, if you're gonna choose which battles to fight, like, you know, foreigning out certain cards, like, that's probably a good one. You know, Birds of Paradise, Sylvan Library, maybe, like, so I like that kind of stuff. So that was just like the kind of stuff I picked up. Even just you know, masterpieces I know I'm gonna use. Like duplicate chromatic lanterns, shit that I think is probably going to bottom out soon. Just looking at Soul Ring again, like I'm not even touching Soul Ring. I'm going for the German black border Soul Rings. So I don't know, man. I do enjoy EDH though, or at least deck building, not necessarily.
Yeah, man, you get real salty when you play EDH. You're like, Don't say any political shit or I'll just attack you right now. You can't even point out who's winning.
So,
to JR. He's like, point out who's winning, I'll attack you.
If you say the words he, like, that person is accumulating advantage, that you're dead. but Samet the Tested, I don't even know if that goes in Xenagos. Like Xenagos basically wants all double strike effects, at least in my build, but
this card is dog shit. It's dog shit. Samet the Tested is dog shit. I would rather have the other Samet. The ultimate is too hard to build up to, and it doesn't really... Man, I don't know. I think the ultimate can... It's a tooth and nail. So maybe you do run it just to... Fuck. That's a good point. If you're in Xenagos and you're just fucking giving your Malignus double strike and attacking until you can tooth and nail and win, man, I don't know.
But I don't think so, because... Unless you're blocking with a mana dork or something, yeah, like it's the same thing with Chandra in Purphoros. Like sometimes I just don't, even though you really want card draw in red, Chandra's just kind of fragile, right? Like a lot of times you'll just play it, draw a card, and it'll die. I do think Monastery Siege is a good pickup, and going back to like MTG Finance, it's a newer card, but it's basically in red. It's basically the best card draw in red. I feel like for me, I put it in almost every red deck. Like
that seems printable to me.
No, it has Khans and Dragons rhetoric on it, right?
Yeah, they've put man, I don't know. I used to think that having, like, really set specific stuff on it made it a little harder to reprint, but those sieges are so good in EDH, I can't see them never getting a reprint. That would be crazy.
Sure.
The green one's stupid. You get two green in your pre-combat and post-combat main phase? Just, man, it was that card was made to go in Omnath decks. And Krufix, too, I guess. Or any deck where you could use four mana a turn.
Sure. But, yeah, see, I mean, Bonastera Siege, the foils, I don't know. But in terms of new cards, again, of course, the big one, Solemnity, a bunch of shit is fucking spiked off that. Well, not a bunch, but maybe a handful.
Oh, probably 10 cards.
Yeah.
And back people in the are still day, trying to find shit. They're like, Phyrexian Soul Gorger.
Yeah, back in the day when I was enthusiastic about brewing Constructed Magic, I would have been all about the Chronozoa Blasting Station combo. Just infinite 3-3 flyers, but 3-card combo. But I don't know. After the Vizier came out, and I was just, I said to myself, I don't know, there are already a bunch of 3-3, you know, green-white combo, 3-3-card combos. And then that took off. I almost lost interest in modern brewing.
What do you think of Uncage the Menagerie?
It's almost just like an okay card advantage spell, right? You get like 3-3-3s or
4-4-4s.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I think about it. So of course,
for 7 mana, you get 5/5/5s. Probably discard all of them and like reanimate them.
Yeah, in terms of combos, the card it most reminds me of is Weird Harvest, which I've always like tried to like jam in modern, like for you know.
We're well aware of your Weird Harvest brews.
Yeah,
we know all about that on this podcast. We're the ones that have to hear about it.
But at this point, I'm just you know, even so, there's a new Steward of Solidarity that combines with Intruder Alarm, so it's now the cheapest 2-card combo in modern.
You had Intruder Alarm combos before that no one gave a shit about.
Sprout Swarm, exactly.
Thing the whole time, and no one gave a fuck about Sprout Swarm. I was running that in Extended. It was Blue Green Elves. That deck was stupid. You would get Intruder Alarm in either Sprout Swarm or Imperious Perfect, and you just go off at their end step and then just kill them.
But sometimes something coming down one mana makes a difference, and you're just like, oh, it already exists, and then it comes down. I felt like the new Cheerios deck was a little bit like that. It's not like you're a genius if you have the time to brew a deck. It's more about the play skill to put up the numbers, you know, in the sideboarding to actually put up the numbers. Because if you just quote unquote brew decks and never play, there's going to be a ton of cards that you're like, oh yeah, I like that card 2 years ago. And then like someone makes it work and you're like, oh fuck, that was my card, you know?
JR has experienced this multiple times.
That's just how it goes. My card.
Boy, Pride Sovereign seems really stupid in a universe where we have Paradox Engine. I think everything's done with Paradox Engine, obviously, but anything that taps to do something is just...
Does Pride Sovereign just go straight into Reese? Just like the right green, blue, or green-white token deck? Or
I would think so, yeah. Like, because you can, like, get Anointed Procession and shit. Like, it's obviously not an infinite combo. You still gotta play spells to untap it, but man, like... If you shit like anything with buyback is just dumb because you untap all your mana rocks, all your mana dorks. I don't know. I like Intruder Alarm combos too. And
the problem is there aren't a lot of cheap enchantment tutors in modern. Or like at least with artifacts, you have a number of blue tutors, and you know even the new land and. Tutoring up enchantments is tough, so it's harder to get innate of. Training Ground is another one that seems like it's going to go up eventually.
Training Ground? Have you seen the price of Training Grounds lately?
Is it already the boat passed? Is that what you're saying? Foils are what? Not even 15, they're like 15, right? 13, 15?
Foils? I don't know.
You know, it's one of these cards.
Foils are 15. And it's like a $9 card.
Yeah, so I think that's still fine because in EDH, it's like in Constructed, it's like, well, you know, it's so conditional. It's much less conditional in EDH. You just know pretty much you're going to have the advantage.
Your whole deck set up to benefit.
The Blacks and Zenith promo is another one. Like, it's already, you know, it's at that $15 level, but it's a good card, they're never going to reprint the full art, you know? So, in terms of spoilers, I think Torment of Hailfire was like another one that, for some reason,
Torment of Hailfire is nuts, man.
Yeah. What else was on my list? Oh, and of course, that obscene God's Pharaoh's artifact. God Pharaoh's, whatever. Like, it's just going in, it goes in any color and.
How do you like Empty Sarcophagus? Oh yeah, God Pharaoh's Gift. I think that was Commander in Spoiler. That's a good one.
Which one is Empty? Did that come out today?
Yeah. Abandoned Sarcophagus, sorry. You can cast non-land cards with cycling from your graveyard. And if a card was cycling, we'd put in your graveyard from anywhere and it wasn't cycled, exile it.
Sure. So, like, I mean, I guess maybe eventually, like you're saying, there'd be like an EDH cycling deck.
I can't figure out what I want to do with it, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then in Standard, there are a couple interesting ones, but we don't even need to discuss like how good Hollow One is, or Mage Mirror even is slightly interesting.
We got another cycle of cycling lands.
Mirage Mirror, yeah.
I actually kind of like the Nico Bolas the Deceiver and Visage of Bolas in the Planeswalker decks.
Yeah, or even the Djeru with Open Eye. This is like, yeah, Planeswalker support. There's the blue Anime Dead, or at least, you know, if they have effects. So exile X creature cards from your graveyard for each card exiled this way. Create a token that's a copy of that card, except it's a 4/4 black zombie for 3 blue and double X.
At Hour of Eternity. It seems almost exactly like a black card. I don't understand. Oh, the token's a copy, therefore. Man, I don't know.
That's how we're going to do it.
You know, we got Drachna's Restoration. Blue sometimes recall. Blue sometimes goes to the graveyard for shit.
But, like, making
especially
tokens?
Zombies. Blue-black zombies are pretty. I think, like, the zombie is like the fig leaf where it's like, oh, this is okay. Cause...
Yeah, exactly. The Scarab God is the one doing the Hour of Eternity,
yeah,
so
Scarab
it's fine.
Yeah,
it's
kind
of
cool, actually. Yeah, I didn't even really linger on the first row here, but Scarab God looks fun.
Locust God made fucking my Mana Echoes call look smart because it spiked already.
Yeah, that was one old border foil that just, I was on my sort of, not on my list, but it was
I was
on my
waiting for it to not be in Commander 2017. I was like, wait to see if it's in Commander 2017, and if it's not, buy him. And some people are like, we'll buy him now. And I was like, don't. And then the Locust God came out, and everyone's like, ah, fire! I hope all those people get their dicks ripped off by a reprint. I really do.
Mana Echo, in terms of cards that have been involved in combos in Magic's history, it's pretty good, but not the easiest to just slip into a cube or what have you to have a two-card combo with something that's already good. So I never picked one up. But, yeah, it's pretty much what I got on the new stuff, unless we want to go over to the Ixalan.
What got leaked? The whole rare sheet? The foil rare sheet?
I don't know.
I'll worry about Ixalan when it's time to worry about it. I noticed that like it kind of got spoiled and everyone's like, oh, Ixalan, and no one is talking about the impact of any of those cards.
No.
Like everyone's just sort of ignoring it, which I think is funny.
And also the other thing about like talking about cards in a pot, there are other cards that could, of course, just be cards in Standard. Like, I don't know, like Unesh the Sovereign, that, you know, that could be like a Standard card and just be like, oh, you didn't talk about it. So I don't know.
What was that?
Unesh, the...
Oh, no, what was that the comment you made about it? What was that?
It's people, you know, were necessarily... You've done enough reviews to know that if you don't... It's very unsatisfying if you focus on one card that does nothing, and then you don't really talk about a card that is a big... Especially, you know, maybe Standard, where you weren't really... You know, the rate was good enough, and it seemed kind of boring, and you weren't sure it was going to fit in, and then it just took off... So, oh man, money draft.
Money draft.
Money draft. The there was a recent article put out that that long-time listeners will know since 2015 that we've been following an Amtrak derailment. And the guy who was the driver is finally prosecuted.
Yeah, there was the NTSB. So basically, JR, you know, he knows a hawk from a handsaw, and he knows a fiasco from a fuck up. And when he heard about a train derailing at max speed at Duffy's Corner in Philadelphia, which is a notorious, basically the slowest turn in the whole Eastern Corridor, you know, for
if you're paying attention.
Yeah. If you know about your train disasters, you know about this. And so for a train to be going max speed at the one point in like a 1,000-mile stretch that it shouldn't be going max speed, is instantly like, well, that seems intentional.
There's some fuckery going on here.
Now, it could be the case that the guy's like super, super, super unlucky, and the one time in his life that he had like some unexplained fugue or whatever, he was just happened to be at that point. But I don't know, but it seemed like the NTSB, there's sort of this, I get the sense that the NTSB and Amtrak, they don't even want to have the specter or the possibility of like rogue engineers in a crash train. So they've sort of like, and this guy seems like he's not like a radical, you know, so they're just like, all right, this is just like a weird thing. We're going to just say that it was an accident and it, you know, he just got knocked out somehow.
One family, right? Like pursued it.
Yeah. I mean, the whole class action, like, and they're just like, no. And so eventually, the state, I guess it's like this, in terms of different jurisdictions. I don't know I don't have the article up right now, but basically like the first jurisdiction sort of said like, no, he's fine. And then the state's, you know, top prosecutor was like, no, it's not fine. We're going to do something here. So the money draft we were correct in our episode. I don't know what it was, probably 25, 30 episodes ago where
we were on this story.
Yeah.
It's happening almost in real time. And
it happened on the train ride, on the train line, the train that JR and I would take to go see each other. So.
Right. And it was like a day after you came up on a Saturday or something. And it was just like, yeah, that's definitely intentional. And no one was like, oh my God, there's like a terrorist white guy. Cause he's a white guy. Right. And it's kind of weird. Whereas in Boston, you know, three people died and you never hear the end of that. But so it's kind of weird how different.
They talk about the marathon bombing?
Yeah, yeah.
They were white.
I'm not minimizing that, but I'm just saying, like, one city is like three people died and they want to make it like their 9/11. And then another city, it's like if someone wrote an op-ed, you know, like I considered saying, like, this is really fucked up. What's going on here? People would be like, oh, yeah, it's fucked up. But. So, I don't know, man. What's my point? My point was Ira was right,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, the point was that there was closure on the story, and we were right.
I was right due to my morbid knowledge, I guess. You know.
Boom, boom.
Boom.
Yeah. Well.
What about you, Jason? Were you in some kind of weird, jacked-up Batman roast last night?
Yeah, dude, every once in a while we break up the monotony of just doing open mics and having people tell their same shitty jokes. And we decided that a year ago I was going to do, like, I saw something called character assassination online. And basically you do, like, a Friars Club style roast, but of fictional characters. That way you can go as fucking hard as you want. Because, like, I've been in some roast battles and I've been in some roast situations with local comics and everyone's like, I can take it. And then they fucking can't. Because if I'm going to roast you, I'm going to go pretty fucking hard. So,
yeah, I would deal well with that.
Yeah, because there's lingering resentment and shit. You got to work with those people.
I think I would want to, like, start a debate. I'd just like, no, now we're going to talk. No, I'm not going to let you finish. We're going to talk about this right now.
Yeah. So what we do is we just roast fictional characters. And last night we did Batman and, like, it was standing room only. It was pretty fucking insane. So, I think we're going to do Darth Vader next. So that was fun. Everyone got to dress up in costumes and write really, really horrible things about fictional characters, so no one's feelings were hurt. There were some obscure references. People enjoyed that. It was just a really good time.
You were the commissioner there?
I was the commissioner, and I had to shave my whole beard off. And I shaved the mustache because my daughter cried.
Yeah, I did that too when my dad, like, he shaved his beard. I was like, oh my God, my dad's a different guy. Fuck, it's disturbing as fuck. It really is.
She didn't like she didn't like the porno stash for sure.
You have really good hair in Vegas. I appreciate this. You have really thick hair that stands up on its own.
Yeah, that's I'm blessed genetically. I got that thick hair.
It's just wide the edge. I bet you have a giant bush, like it's a giant.
We all know JR loves
like,
a big
even
bush.
If you're not
yeah,
hairy,
yeah. Like even if you're even a dude, like I would like to see your bush. That's what I'm trying to say.
Even if you're not hairy per se in terms of expansiveness, like I bet there's a lot going on. But
yeah, it's coming out of my fucking ears now that I turned 30 and I started getting the ear hair, so that's cool.
Good.
If you'd like some of my ear hair grafted onto you to sort of help thicken out what you got going on, I'm willing to donate.
Yeah, maybe. It probably would form like a good support, like a rebar steel bar, and like just, you know, supporting the thinner hairs around it.
Yeah, it would prop them up. It would make them look more voluminous.
That's good. Yeah. Maybe one day we should have a magic roast, but like for the same reasons you mentioned, I don't know. It could could get weird. I don't know. Yeah.
It'll be the last episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
We'll delete our Twitter accounts.
But I mean, a roast, you still have to write a joke. It still has to be like, you can't just say something shitty.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
It's too easy to say something shitty. You gotta like actually have some wordplay or just like some sort of...
JR just wants to just fucking berate people.
You could just be savagely sarcastic, like TJ Miller's comedy routine was a 10 of 10 comedy routine, or yeah, whatever. I don't know. Do you guys ever watch that show?
What?
Silicon Valley? No.
Oh yeah.
I don't.
It's a season 1, 2, a great show, great characters. The writing just went off a cliff.
And, oh, that's I only saw the first 2 seasons.
No, that's good. But my point was, like, they tried to do too much. And it's part of the reason why Miller left the show, which I don't know if that's a good idea, but I agree that the show's writing sucked because they tried to do too much, jamming everything into every fucking episode for whatever reason. So my tie-in was, like, it reminded me of recent Magic Design.
Boom.
But boom.
Boom, hopefully, motherfucker.
Roasted!
Magic Design is trying to do too much. Calm the fuck down.
Roasty draft.
I assume the new Unset will be a giant success.
I mean, probably.
Dude, I heard it's pirates and dinosaurs fighting. That's perfect flavor for an Unset. I think it's going to be a home run.
Yeah.
Oh, I think you heard of the wrong one.
That's the joke.
That's the joke, JR.
But in terms of... unless they have premium lands, or unless they have, maybe they tone down a little bit.
They will have premium lands.
But like really, like lands that people actually, because people are, at this point, you know.
They know what people like. They know the difference between a fucking Bola's Basic and a fucking John Avon or Therese Nielsen land. They know.
Expeditions are kind of crap. But maybe they'll tone down a little bit, so there'll be a lot of cards you could just stick in a cube. It's kind of interesting. So, we'll see.
People have been clamoring for that for years. You know what?
Well, that's what some people say.
That's what some people... I wanted one for years.
Yeah, but, like, I started wanting it when I was 15. I'm not fucking 15 anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think these data points...
When did Unhinged come out? I was, like... I think I was, like, 17 or 18 when Unhinged came out.
Yeah, these data points. Of course, like, some people are going to, like, you know, email other people and be like, oh, I really like the Unsets, you know, and if enough of those will accumulate over time, but do people like the unsets? We'll see.
We'll see how their buying behavior actually goes versus what they say. But man, I don't know. One thing I've learned in content production is you can't give people what they say they want. Because you can't do it exactly the way they envisioned it, so you just don't even bother trying. Just give them some, give them your fucking best effort, and the people that like that will flock to it, and the people that like what you're about will be like, that might not be exactly what I wanted, but I like what you're about. You can't fucking give people what they say they want, because people are fucking stupid, man. You watch that Malcolm Gladwell TED talk about the spaghetti sauce, and I watched that thing, and it changed my fucking viewpoint about like content production. Basically, the thrust of that was it was like Ragu, I think. They like, what do people want? They're like, we want a traditional Italian spaghetti sauce, and they're like, all right, well, and they kept making traditional Italian spaghetti sauce, and they weren't like getting market share. So like, fuck it. They came up with like 25 new flavors, and they sat people down, and everybody said they wanted traditional spaghetti sauce, but then they tried like 20 different flavors, and they all had like, each person had their own preference. Like, it was like a 20-way tie when you asked all the people what their favorite flavor was. So like, fuck, we gotta have 20 kinds of spaghetti sauce. Why the fuck were we only making one kind of spaghetti sauce? So when people tell you what they think they want, they'll fucking say something stupid. But when you give them 20 choices, like, they'll actually gravitate toward the thing they want. So you have to just make shit and then build an audience that way. Because you can't ask people what they say they want.
Right. But at the same time, you don't make stuff like the invocation design. That's just, you need to find a place where it's like...
You don't do that.
You don't want to be fake Steve Jobs, like, stuff. In your head, where it's like, people, I'm going to thought lead. And it's like, maybe you shouldn't thought lead so much. Like... So you have to find the balance.
I get it, but like, yeah, if you do something that's dog shit, and then everyone will tell you it's dog shit, and you're like, hey, sorry, I made dog shit. But Wizards is like, well, we made this dog shit a year ago, and it's printed, and the packs are ready to go to fucking dealers, so if you didn't like the Amonkhet invocations, guess what, fuckfaces? The Hour of Devastation invocations are already printed, so I don't know what to fucking tell you other than tough titty.
Yeah.
Tough titty.
Iron clad titty.
People complaining who complain about the Amonkhet invocations complaining again now. It's like, I don't know what you expected, dog, but yeah. Like, imagine printing and a cigarette boat, dude. It's a fucking oil tanker, and sometimes oil tankers end up on coral reefs, man. It's just a thing that happens.
Yeah. My favorite files recently are the strange animals, that kind of shit. It calms me. Although it's kind of repetitive, but like the Stargazer fish, the one that just lives it looks like a face. It burrows under the sand, and then so you just look down, and there's like this weird distorted face just like staring up in the sand. That's the best.
You like looking down and seeing that fucking Kafka-esque bullshit, like a weird distorted face. You're like, oh, that's calming. Look, it's a human-looking face sticking out of the sand, just like a fucking eldritch monster at the bottom of the ocean. I've never been calmer in my life. Yeah. That's what you're about, really?
Yeah, I don't know about calm, but...
You used the word calm, man. I didn't. You did.
I think if there were just a ridiculous kind of money draft mansion with various things, like there would definitely be a sort of aquarium coffee table with those fish underneath, and they'd just be staring at you.
That does sound calming. Hey, JR, your weird human face fish coffee table's looking at me. You're like, yeah, that's all they do all day. I'd be like, cool, man. Let's do some blow.
I got some.
What else you can do
ones.
On a coffee table like that?
I got some albino ones. I got some ones with like weird non-terminal disease that like makes them special colors. It's good.
I'm not going to lie, man. That sounds really alarming to me. And if I were under the influence of any sort of chemical and I saw a human face fish looking at me, I'd probably tear my own skin off. And then I would just be another statistic. Be like, man, now this guy ruined weed for all of us. Everybody was being cool on weed. And then this dude tore his own face off. So now there's no more legal weed and it'll be my fault. But it won't be because of weed at all. It'll be because of that weird fish. But the fucking weed's going to get the... There's like, no one's going to believe it was a stupid fish that made you tear your own skin off. you asshole, it's definitely the marijuana. You fucked up the cause for everybody. And then people will be all fucking mad at me. But they won't do anything because stoners are lazy. Like, let's go fucking pick at his house. But then they won't. They'll just, like, get high and watch Glow on Netflix. But they'll be like, man, we should really... Man, I hate that guy. So I guess if there's anybody to have pissed off at you, like, it's okay if it's stoners because they won't do anything about it. But I don't know, man. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, don't fucking have me look at one of those fish. Because that's just going to cause problems for everybody.
You're gonna be looking at it later.
Yeah,
the probably. Teeth are probably... so fucked up, they're like so distorted, they're like little shit sharky teeth all in different directions, but with like a more human sort of eyes. You need to look at that.
Mm.
But I like animals, man. Like so they're calming relative to other things on my feed. Put it that way.
That's fair. That's fair. Episode 68, everybody.
Al esfuerzo y al heroísmo de una revolución, no los queremos, no los necesitamos.
Yo, you know it. It's a Mitch 99. This is my keep down. My thugs over here, baby. Straight dogs on this side. Let's do or die to the death. Like the terminal ill, taking their last breath. Read your last right. God forgive me for the sin I'm about to commit. Taking a life, kill or be killed. Rather that than somebody else reading my will. You feel what I feel, you know the deal. Keep the infrared next to my bed. One in the head, hearing noises. Dead tired eyes, bloodshot red. Sleep with half closed eyelids. Some say it's strange, sometimes it's how strange life get. Go easy on the bottom, niggas love to see where niggas slipping off point on the strength they bet. Scoping your eyes, praising it like the Diamond District jeweler with the hand on the biscuit. Do ya wanna get caught lifted or sober so you can react quick? Blow you off the atlas as if I caught you fucking my wife on my $1,000 mattress. It's the world that I live in. QB made me. My moms that love me and the pops that raised me.
Y'all need to give it up. We don't give a fuck what y'all niggas want. The life is mine. Y'all need to give it up. We don't give a fuck what y'all niggas want. The life is mine.
I got the style of a stillborn child. I'm ill if it's beef. Poking with the fork, make sure he's done well. The streets raised me crazy, now I'm immune to it. So when they start shooting, we don't stop the music, keep it moving, that's how we do it. Been through more drama than the Bowens, you still crawling. Apply street rules to the office, high performance, rap author. Make millions off of melodic, hypnotic productions that'll fuck with your conscience and touch your emotions. You feel me? I write a graphic page, escort niggas to their grave. Relate to the projects, we the black mob. It gets deeper than rap music, it's more real than any words I can muster. Pull the black Cadillac trucks up. I bought them shits like what? Y'all niggas can't touch us.
Y'all need to give it up. We don't give a fuck what y'all niggas want. The life is mine. Y'all need to give it up, cause we don't give a fuck what y'all niggas want. The life
silk
is
shirts
mine.
On my chest show, what a flirt. Holly Berry blew a kiss at the Barbara Streisand concert. Silk pants, colored pink, Gators match, gangsta musical thing. And I front like my doodle don't stink. Instinct like Cuba Gooden, stepping out the latest toy. Half the lights blinking, Gators hit the floor. Everybody watching red carpet inches, cameras flashing. Just to think that was yesterday's action, cause the day goes either way. We came a long way from hallway steps and hand-me-down shit. Fuck my foes, I seen the other side. Next tell, sell, roam. Call a chopper phone, heliport at my home. Quincy Jones posters, wake up, guns under my pillow. I can't talk around chauffeurs. Shit is better than a novel. Autobiographic. Spit it on tracks, it becomes classic. Start some, make my heart pump. Spark when I'm God, son. Nostradamus last when the blast, when the knocks come. Know how to leave anything in 30 seconds when you feel the heat. Coming and flee with the murder weapon. I'll release one. Shot you deceased. Learn your lesson. Your flesh turn to maggots, bastards. You passed it. Cremate your flesh to ashes. You don't need a suit, no wake, no funeral, and no casting.
Y'all need to give it up. We don't give a fuck what y'all niggas want. The life is mine. Y'all need to give it up, cause we don't give a fuck what y'all niggas want. The life is mine.
Thug life is mine. Thug life is mine. Thug life is mine. Ill will. Need to give it up. We don't give a fuck what y'all niggas want.
And by the way, don't try to save money by wearing multiple layers of clothes, because that's a red flag apparently, and you're going to be taken. There's going to be a man in the box code. You're going to be taken to a room on the side and have to strip down.
Money draft.
Never going to be on iTunes.
Why? Because we said motherfucker. Because we need somebody who knows what they're doing to do it for us.
No, we know what to do. We just, we need to keep it on the DL. It's a lot of
money draft. Let's just do a Rolling Star and pretend all that was on the cast, because fuck it.
No, man, we don't do Rolling Starts on this fucking podcast.
Money draft. We don't do this fucking podcast.